introductory episode of Stand Up For Yourself, a podcast about doing comedy in isolation. I recorded a little bit of a stand-up set, I guess, by myself to give you an idea of what at least that segment of our show is going to be like. Obviously, I just have myself. I don't have my co-host. I don't have any guests, so there's not going to be any interview, as entertaining as that could possibly be. But here's me trying to do stand-up by myself. Enjoy. Hello out there. Stand up for yourself. It's a podcast. I'm Henry Mortensen. You can call me Hank if you want. Because I'm tough like a tank, and I smoke the dankest dank. Welcome to the podcast. This is a sort of preview episode. Give you a little bit of an idea of what it's going to be like. I'm sitting here alone at home, as a lot of us are. Maybe we've got a few people with us. Wondering what to do with myself. The political candidate I was backing backed out of the race or suspended his campaign today. My boy Bernie. And, you know, so what am I going to do with my time? This podcast, you know, we're going to explore what it's like to do comedy when you can't be in front of an audience. Got a co-host who talking to, and we're hopefully going to have some good guests, have some remotely recorded stand-up and some interviews about comedy, about life, about isolation, about this world we live in. It's crazy times we're in, but it's, you know, it's really a time that can be for reflection and improvement, self-improvement, societal improvement. Those of us that have the luxury of some security, but also have a lot of time with ourselves to think, maybe more than we're used to, maybe we can get something out of that. One of the best ways, I think, to deal, not only to analyze life, but to deal with tragedy specifically, is comedy. You know, when it's, you know, intentional and shared. Obviously not when it's like the sort of real life farce, in some ways, that we're living through, which is more just horrifying. Speaking about the top there, about the man supposedly in charge, our president, who seems, he seems a little, I don't know if out of touch with reality. It's more like he's negotiating with reality, with immutable laws of nature. He's throwing things out, trying to see how the virus will respond to different deadlines. Maybe if it will meet him halfway. He tried April 1st. Things are going to warm up by April 1st. A little bit of a bluff, because a lot of people throughout the country probably are aware that there are many areas where it's not so warm April 1st, not really warm enough to think you're going to suppress a virus. He tried that. He tried Easter, which is coming up now. Didn't work, but, he thought maybe, you know, that could be a really good sort of soft open, try it out, try out not having the virus as a new thing, see where it goes. It's like he thinks that Fauci is coronavirus's agent, you know, that he can just kind of like try something. Maybe Fauci will come back and then, you know, they'll negotiate me in halfway. But Fauci just will not move. It's like he will not let go of these facts. You know, it's crazy. Crazy. But I don't know. Maybe Trump is, you know, stuck in the bargaining stage of some kind of grief. He doesn't seem like the kind of person who really does grief. But, you know, maybe he, I don't know. I want to say it's mourning for his presidency. But unfortunately, 2020 is not a done deal for the Democrats. So I don't know, his legacy, something. He's bargaining, he's bargaining as hard as he can with, immutable laws of nature. You know, but Easter, you know, maybe he thought, maybe he's trying to, he's working on a symbolic level of, he thought, you know, rebirth, that, the virus would like the style of that pitch, you know, the rebirth thing, which of course is why there's an Easter bunny. That's why those various traditions have been merged together to have a bunny and a Jesus, a ghosty zombie Jesus. But yeah, that's, you know, the fertility, rabbits are representative of fertility, not just in Europe where that tradition comes from, but in Mesoamerica and East Asia, all over the place, because rabbits fuck a lot. I mean, that's the, as we all know. I mean, I've never I've never had rabbits as pets. I don't know. So I mean, but the what I've always heard is that rabbits have a lot of sex and a lot of babies, and they like to fuck a lot all the time. If you leave them alone, they fuck. That's just, you know, they get down. But that's kind of a, like a weird, awkward thing to have to explain to your kids. Cause I mean that, I don't know. I remember kind of asking about it, but especially if you're like a Christian family and that's why they're asking. I mean, it might just be because of societal, you know, like that Easter is a Christian thing. Even if you're, you know, you know, that you, it's going to come up at some point, like what's with the rabbits. And, you know, so you gotta tell your kid, you know, it's a symbol of fertility and traditional, you know, European, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, your kid, but why, what, okay, but why are rabbits, okay, and then you gotta explain what fertility is, you gotta dance around that sex landmine, and tell your little kids about vegetables and mothers and have the power of womanhood and babies and, I don't know, plowing crops or whatever. Well, you don't plow, you know, you plow the soil and then what you get. You know, and then they're gonna be like, okay, but like, yeah, okay, I understand the word fertility now, I think. But yeah, but what, why rabbits? I still don't understand why rabbits, you know, the kid is going to ask you. And you're going to have to say, well, because there's a lot of, you know, rabbits make a lot of other rabbits. And the kid's going to be like, okay, how? You know, like, well, you know, they, you're like, what, you're going to have to tell your kids, like, well, you know, rabbits fuck. They like to fuck. They, you know, they fuck. You know, they get down. What can I say? I would not. I don't have kids. But if I did, I don't think I would do it that way. I'm not sure. But it's a weird thing that Easter is, you know, because it's got that, like, pagan fertility goddess kind of thing snuck in there. Astara. You know, but it's like, what the fuck does fucking have to do with Jesus? I mean, you know, non-apocryphal we're talking. You know, we're talking strictly canon. We're not talking extended universe Jesus. We're just talking the, you know, the standard, you know, the canon. What's the canon now? It's a little after the fact. There's a few hundred years with all this other stuff, but the canon's the canon. But born of a virgin mother, stays a virgin himself, dies a virgin, then comes back, the whole Easter thing, right? He has his rebirth as a holy, well, he's not the Holy Ghost, it's Jesus, but it is a spirit version of Jesus who's light enough to walk on water, so in some ways incorporeal. I don't know, you can get into the sort of nerd physics of it, but lighter than water, buoyant, very buoyant, the second coming, well, I guess that's a different thing. I don't, you know, I'm not Christian, I said, I'm doing my best here. Haven't read all the books, you know, there's a lot. I, you know, more of a fan of the extended universe than the canon. Anyways, extended universe Jesus. Easter Jesus. Yeah, so he comes back, but there's no vagina involved in him, his second birth. So there's, like, even less genitalia. And does he even have genitalia? Because every depiction I've seen, he's got that loincloth. Like, whether we're talking crucifixion Jesus or Easter Jesus, like, those are the most scantily clad. Because then we've got, like, finger gesture Jesus and heart Jesus and all the other, like, all of his other forms of power, you know, there's always some clothes, I don't know, so, you know, it's weird that then it's, like, the fuck bunnies, and then the 33-year-old virgin zombie, I don't know, there's very little fertility in that story, in the canon, there's a little more fertility stuff in the extended universe version of Jesus, but I mean, we can still enjoy those stories, but that's just not the continuity that we're gonna keep getting stories in. Yeah, you know, it's weird the way, you know, there's a lot to follow with the religious stuff, and then because it's like you got the main character, you know, mascot kind of guys of your religion, or gals sometimes, and then there's like the other, like, well, like those are like more like the player, and then there's the mascot who's like maybe the Easter Bunny and the in Christianity and Santa Claus. You got these other people next to the main ones that, like, the whole ritual is it's like cool too, because it's not just like a one night ritual yearly thing, it's a ritual that takes place over several years. It's a coming of age ritual for your children. It's the first one they experience in a big way that they remember, mate. And because what you're doing is you're building up the story purposefully, on purpose, as a parent, telling your kids all this stuff about this magic figure who comes in and is invisible and super fast and all knowing and all seeing. And, you know, gives them these rewards if they do the right thing. And they, you know, but will wreak some potential vengeance if they cross this powerful being. And if they stay in line, if they do the right thing, if they do what they're supposed to do, there will be rewards in the very immediate future. And, you know, more long term down the line over the, you know, your actions through the course of the year. Only to eventually, very purposefully and poignantly tell them that it's time to grow up, and guess what? That was all a lie, and it was hilarious for us as your parents, but not true. Total bullshit. Yeah. So it's a very, it's agnostic, it's not atheist really, it's like agnostic, it's kind of like this agnostic thing, it's this built-in agnosticism within modern organized religion, and like then there's the secular people that do it, but it's just teaching this lesson of agnosticism of like, look, religion's total bullshit, but it's super fun anyways. So, you know, like, you knew Santa was fake the past 2 years? My point exactly. You just kept it going to get the presents. It's fun. Right? So that's the lesson of Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny is the, you know, it's the agnostic lesson of do it anyways, I guess. I don't know. I use the term mascots. I hope that's not too offensive. That was the least offensive thing I think I did and all that. Everything else, totally fine. Totally fine. That Well, it's similar to me with sports mascots or whatever, because they help you believe that your team's going to win, that there is a point to the faith you have. They add some pageantry and fun to it. And even if you are losing, they'll do something to cheer you up. And you like, so even if you know it's a facade, you know there's a guy in that suit, but it helps. And you treat it like a real person and you revere it potentially. It's a symbol, but it's a symbol you can laugh at, which is healthy. A lot of our symbols, unfortunately, to bring it back to politics, we don't have the same faith in them that we used to. Sort of that process of growing out of Santa Claus and the Easter Bunny have, it's kind of similar to the national American experience we've had with our relationship with, particularly with the office of the presidency the past, say, 50 years, of just totally eroding the faith in it. Because also we have, it's not so much that it's, I mean, in some ways maybe it has gotten worse or more corrupt, but we know more. We've learned more about past presidents. We're more jaded because of what's come to light, and we live in a high information time with where people don't have much of a filter, and so we know a lot more about the candidates that are out there now. A lot of the candidates are also older and have long track records. But yeah, the magic is gone in our politics. But, you know, that's maybe healthy because we all need to grow up and admit bullshit when we see it, especially if it's not fun. And this fucking ineptitude in our government is not fun, especially when it comes to the coronavirus. So, the options we have are not great, but what we have right now is literally killing people. So don't vote for that one. Vote for the other one. The one that's not actively killing people by withholding medical equipment. All right. That is a very dark ending to my set. You've been a lovely audience, I hope. I hope you were. I hope you didn't heckle me. I don't know. That is a benefit. But that's what stand-up done alone in your house sounds like. I hope it was enjoyable, and I hope to have some more content for you all soon. Thanks again, and please stay safe out there, and have a good Passover, have a good Easter, whatever you celebrate. Connect with your loved ones however you can. Be grateful for the things you can be, and try and make each other laugh. All right, let's give him a hand. Coming off the stage, it's me. Hope you enjoyed that. Wanted to start setting the bar low, hopefully not too low. That was our first stand-up. My name's Henry Mortensen. I work in print media for a company called Percival Press, as well as music and film for Percival Pictures and Percival Press, as well as other independent projects. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Mixmaster H without any vowels. That's MXMSTRH. Thanks for listening, and tune into our next episode. You've been a great audience, and hopefully a healthy one. Oh. music you've been hearing is Classless Act by the band Skating Polly off their album The Make It All Show. You can find their music literally everywhere.